from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of February, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Dave Chatterton will help us take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural energies. And along the way, we'll hear from Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist, about the crop insurance decision farmers and landowners will be making by the 15th day of March, all here on this Tuesday edition of Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And all three of them, by the way, will join us at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 8th day of March, for our spring outlook in conjunction with the Farm Doc team. You can too. It just costs $25. It's a day-long event. The Farm Doc team, the Will Ag panelists, a Beef House lunch, and coffee and rolls in the morning from there. And you can sign up today at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn settled at $6.38. That was down 17 and three quarters. December at 589 and three quarters, 8.5 cents lower today. March beans down 18 and three quarters, 1551 and a quarter. The settlement price, new crop November, $14.32, down 10.5 cents. Bean meal down 960. The bean oil for the day, 18 cents lower. And soft red winter wheat was down 19.5 at 779.5. Live cattle futures were 55 higher. Feeders were up $1.85, and lean hogs were $1.82.5 higher on the day. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to try to tell us a little bit about what happened in Chicago. Tough day for corn, wheat, beans followed suit, but I assume one of the other two grains led. What happened?
Well, I think that it was the reversal of the Russians. They withdrawing some of their troops, heading back to the base, and it looks very much like there will be no invasion of the Ukraine. And that, of course, we were worried about how the shipping was going to be, one of the largest wheat exporters being Russia and the Ukraine there together. All of that together with things, just we built a whole lot into the fact that there could be some problems in shipping and everything else around the world and supplies. And when that system sort of eased up, why we took some of the risk premium out of the market overnight and first thing this morning.
Well, the market's been on pins and needles about this. I'm wondering how much risk premium there might be in different markets, if you have an idea. And it related to Ukraine-Russia and then related to drought in South America. Corn and wheat are, not quite as subject to the drought in South America as soybeans. And I guess I was looking back over the March contract for corn, Wayne, and it seems to me November to January, 50 cent gain and another 50 cent from January till now. The bulk of that may be coming because of Ukraine, Russia, that second 50 cents. I don't know. And then there's a little gap down there that's about it's 623
and a half. We added a lot of just sort of world political, geopolitical, everything into all of that, because there was a lot more concern than just Russia and the Ukraine. There was how the NATO countries reacted to each other, how China come in and reacted to part of this. Remember, we saw China going and talking to Putin and setting up some things. They opened up a great deal of the Russian area that had been off limits because of one of the diseases in the area that they were back to being able to ship wheat to China and that way. And I think that all of the interactions of all the different NATO members and how they felt and what was going on and sort of the deals made when they went and talked to Putin, I think had a lot to do with how they thought the world stuff would end up. And just nothing bad happening, I think, was a very good thing for our markets and the world, because we don't need another war.
Yeah, and inflation was in the middle of that. So given the things that you just talked about, if you only take the Ukraine-Russia part out of it, did we do enough today?
Did we do enough today? Like I say, I think that it's a time to sit back and reassess. We are looking at, we dropped the Brazilian crop a little bit more again today and some of the private estimates that way. So, like I said, is it enough to do? Are we up there real high? It's one of those crazy things we don't know. But I think that the one thing that was talked about a lot today on a lot of the news wires was, can putting interest rates up actually help us solve the supply chain problem that's causing a lot of our inflation? Will that help? I guess if people, if they invest instead of buy goods, why will it eventually catch up? But I don't think it's going to be an instant catch up on that, even if they do. A lot of talk still that it could be a half instead of a quarter of a percent in this next interest raise.
Well, we'll have to wait and watch and see what'll happen there. Thank you so much. I'm also looking forward to having you over at the Beef House. This will be your 31st, if I remember correctly. And you, Wayne Nelson, have been the only person that has been to all of them, I think. But not only that, you're the only person that has been on the stage for all of them, too.
Yes, that's right. And there was a few years where the car did make a 180 spin on the route coming over because of the snow and problems and ice the one day. And I do remember that our meteorologist did not get there until the meeting was over one time. But we've had a lot of fun at those meetings, seen a lot of people. It's always a great time to come to the Beef House and see a lot of our old friends around there. And we'd really encourage and asking a lot of you guys to, you know, take time, come out this year. It's been a couple of years since we got to have a good one of these, and we're really looking forward to seeing all our old friends there.
Indeed. Hey, thanks so much. That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Speaking of the Beef House, Gary Schnitke will be there too from the University of Illinois, the Farm Doc team, and he's up next here on the Closing Market Report. Earlier today, Krista Swanson and Gary Schnitke and I hosted a webinar. You can find it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu right now in the archive section, or if not now, later tonight and tomorrow morning, one of the two. Check it out. It's all about the decisions producers are about to make by the 15th day of March related to crop insurance. However, I've already, of course, talked with Gary as well about it for the radio, and we had a really good discussion. I asked him to outline what he was looking at for the coming year as it relates to crop insurance.
Yeah, so this year we will likely have very high projected prices. If you're looking at futures prices today, you would be saying $5.70 for corn, $13.50 for soybeans, which are very much above where they were recently. But with the rising cost, even at 85% RP levels, we will still likely have losses if we're kicking in crop insurance this year.
Can you detail some of those and maybe start with corn?
Yeah, so corn, we have a $5.70 projected price, and we're going to look at this from a cash basis. So we subtracted off a 30-cent basis and looked at a person with a 220 bushel trend-adjusted APH. They will have, in cash terms, $1,010 worth of coverage. However, there are $1,060 worth of cost, and that would be our non-land cost, $755, and cash rent of $305. Obviously, we can see a lot of higher cash rents than that, but that totals $1,060. So at that level, we're looking at a $50 loss per acre. Obviously, that crop insurance policy provides a stopgap measure, but even at that 85% level, we will have not covered all our costs, and we will have very low to negative incomes for that year.
And for soybeans, what do you find?
So soybeans, we're looking at a $13.50 projected price. Again, we looked at a 30-cent basis. And we, you're using a 70 bushel trend adjusted APH yield. Soybeans have $777 of total cost per acre. If we take an 85% coverage level, our cash guarantee is $785, and we have an $8 revenue in that position. So we do cover our cost, but we still would have very low income. So, you know, those 85% coverage levels are what most people have taken in the past. And even given these high projected prices, we have so much higher costs that we will still be looking at very low incomes, even at that 85% coverage level.
Last week, you wrote about the ARC PLC decision. If I remember correctly, you don't expect payments from either side, so that commodity title probably won't help either.
No, commodity title, you can make whatever choice you have. If either one of them pays in 2022, you're having a very bad year. But, you know, at those at an 85% RP coverage level, those prices and yields would not be even close to making a payments on the commodity title. Remember, we've had so much higher cost added. And then, you know, where prices are higher, but still we have so much higher costs that the coverage offered by commodity titles are very, very low relative to the cost that we're incurring out there these days.
Do you have suggestions?
So my suggestion would be to continue to take an RP policy at a very high level for Central Illinois, 80 to 85%. I would also suggest looking at ECO, SCO, or some buy-up product by the crop insurance companies, a private add-on. Those would offer additional risk protection. I would say if you're going to do that, look at the premium for those add-ons and compare it to the net returns in the situation where you don't get paid and see how much profit those premiums will take. And those premiums can get very costly. Finally, I would suggest pricing more grain than usual. At this time of year, we typically see farmers in the sort of 20% of expected production range for corn. You might be 10% higher than that now. Again, I would not be hedging at all, because if we do have yield shortfalls this year, we could have much higher prices. So there's always that risk. If you hedged at all, that would be a risk. But but still hedge a bit more than usual, because we do have profitable prices now.
Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Check out all the tools related to crop insurance on the FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. There may be quite a bit of ground to cover in the United States over the next week or so. Can you begin in the western part of the U.S. and make your way to the east, please?
Sure thing. Well, first of all, there is a fundamental shift in the weather pattern that in the coming days and weeks ahead, there's going to be more weather in the west and less in the far east. But it also means this pattern change, pretty active weather for the Midwest and parts of the south central United States. And that starts with a low that'll be moving into the high plains and Rockies tonight and tomorrow. That's going to bring snow to those far western areas of the United States, even a little bit of rain and snow into parts of California and the Great Basin. But then out ahead of this low, as it comes over the Rockies by tomorrow night and into Thursday, we're going to be looking at areas of rain, thunderstorms, and snow breaking out from portions of eastern Kansas, eastern Oklahoma, east Texas, and the northeast across Missouri into southern Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, into Michigan. There's going to be a lot of weather from tomorrow night into Thursday and Friday in those areas.
Is it widespread or fairly narrow in coverage?
Well, the narrow area of coverage is going to be with the snow. There's going to be a heavier band of snow on the northern fringes of this. And this is going to be a real trick for weather forecasters to pinpoint where this heaviest snow band is going to be, because it's probably only going to be maybe 75 to 100 miles wide. But there could be in that band of heavier snow 6 to 12 inches of more. And it could range from parts of Kansas and Oklahoma through parts of Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, then into northern Indiana and up into Michigan. That's going to be that narrow band. And depending on where that sets up is going to really dictate who gets the heaviest amounts. Now, like we have seen earlier this winter, there's also going to be a band of freezing precipitation, not as extensive as the last storm. But south of that snow band, we've got to watch out for areas of freezing drizzle, freezing rain, and then heavier rains will fall south of that area And that heavier rain is going to be pretty extensive, going from eastern parts of Oklahoma and Texas through the southern areas of the Ohio Valley, many areas getting an inch or more.
I don't mind snow, but I like it to go away fast. Things change next week so that what might come in large amounts in some parts of the middle of the country would melt quickly?
Well, there will be behind this system, at least at the end of the week and over the weekend, some pretty chilly temperatures. However, to your point and where you're headed is that, yeah, there will be, especially by the end of the weekend, into early next week, a pretty big warm-up in the areas that are going to be getting the snowfall and the ice. So there is going to be some warmer weather by the end of the weekend through the middle of next week. But what we're likely going to see, Todd, is kind of a seesaw back and forth. After a warm-up, there's going to be another one of these systems coming out of the west that by the middle of next week, this would be around the 23rd, 24th, 25th, another possible episode of cold, and that could be associated with some ice and snow as well. So before the month of February is over, we've got two significant systems headed to the Midwest and parts of the Corn Belt that will bring a little bit of everything from snow and ice to rain to possibly some severe thunderstorms on the southern edge of these systems.
If you don't like it now, stick around. It'll change. Thank you so much, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dave Chatterton is now here to help us take a look at the agricultural energies. Dave, we talked earlier in this program with Gary Schnitke about crop insurance. I know you're busy today in Urbana meeting with producers. I assume some of that's about crop insurance and maybe a little price outlook as well.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, you hit the nail on the head here. We're kind of in the middle of our spring meeting updates here. We do about half on the market outlook and what markets look like and what we think may be affecting things into the spring, and then about half on crop insurance and what the updates and the values are looking like for 2022. And of course, we have some new crop insurance products out this year. We have the PACE product, and we have a few others that are out there that, you know, things have changed here. Crop insurance prices are definitely going to be higher this spring, but you're going to get some bang for the buck with higher guarantees here. And we're looking at what right now looks like a record February crop insurance spring guarantee price for soybeans over $14, and not too shabby on beans holding it, or excuse me, on corn holding it near $5.80 right now, currently.
Yeah, on that PACE product, by the way, it's an endorsement for crop insurance related to application of nitrogen. You can learn more about that, and that would be spring post-application after planting of nitrogen into the summer months. You can learn more about that, of course, from Dave and company or from Gary on Thursday of this week. Sign up for the webinar there. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I do want to talk about the energy section. Ukraine-Russia is making it pretty difficult to figure out what's happening there. Do you have an assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think the assessment is that the market is is reacting to just about every headline, but at the end of the day, we really don't have a very good track on where things are going. So we've had a lot of conflicting headlines. You go back to last Friday where there was reports the Biden administration had indicated that an attack was going to take place this week and Russia had made up its mind. We go forward to the yesterday morning and all of a sudden they were, you know, coming back to the negotiating table and the attack was off. Yesterday on the close, we had reports that the Ukrainian PM said the attack is going to be Wednesday. I think that was in jest, but the social media and some of the lost in translation part of that affected our markets late in the day. And then, of course, we come in this morning and Russia is again now said to be pulling some troops back. So it's still a very fluid situation. I think it's going to continue to stay that way, Todd. And, you know, what we know is that Black Sea region between Ukraine and Russia, very important for grain in terms of, you know, number one wheat exporter in the world in Russia, number two or three in Ukraine. Ukraine's 16% of global corn exports, but also very key for the energy and the oil sector. You know, we're talking about Russia being the second biggest, you know, crude producer in the world, second biggest exporter in the world, as well as a huge supplier of natural gas and fuel products into that European market. So this has implications for fertilizer pricing, for fuel pricing, for, you know, grain pricing, and a number of different commodity-centric, you know, views, I would say.
Have you thought about different scenarios and what you think it might mean for the price of energies? Crude oil, of course, above $90 a barrel. And I'm thinking, what happens if things are diffused? What happens if there's sort of status quo for a while? And what happens if they actually roll?
Yeah, I mean, all three very different things. We've had this talk or this Wall Street prediction on call that got started with Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and a few of the Wall Street folks talking about this $100 crude oil. And essentially, I think, Todd, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of, you know, you've got a combination of not only, you know, the inflation play bringing money, outside money into the commodity complex, and specifically on energy and ag, but you've also now got the geopolitical play. Underneath that, we still have a very strong fundamental marketplace here. Our inventories in the U.S. are not quite as tight as what we see globally, but even here, our diesel fuel or distillate inventories are 20% below the five-year average as we get ready to head out of winter and into the spring. And in order to repair or to rectify that situation in a refining sense, you have to make, you know, every barrel of crude oil that you put through a refinery, you get two parts gasoline, one part, you know, distillate. Our gasoline inventories are essentially on par. They're about 3% below that five-year average. So the refiners aren't in a position where they want to make a lot of additional gasoline to fill that distillate or that diesel fuel hole, if you will. So I think even if we see a stand down in the Ukrainian situation, we're still on very strong footing in the energy markets. We've seen OPEC, the EIA, as well as the IEA, all kind of revise their balance sheets to a tighter format here going forward. And I think we're still in a situation where stocks probably draw during the first quarter of the year overall, the oil stocks, and maybe hold par at best. Demand is coming on. It's coming along very strongly, despite the COVID, challenges that we've had. Now, U.S. production is catching up here. We may add as many as 2 million barrels here between now and the end of next year, but it's going to be till late in the last half of the year before we really have a chance to see this market correct significantly lower, even if we don't have a military conflict in the Black Sea.
I don't know whether you would have advice for producers who haven't locked anything in for spring, maybe so, but what should they think about as it relates to fall fuel needs?
Yeah, I mean, fall, I think we're going to be a little bit more patient here. The situation with, you know, we should have a better answer on what happens with the Russian-Ukrainian situation. We should have the chance to see our own production and our own refining rates pick up just a little bit, hopefully some recovery on the part of OPEC and some of these outside producers. So I think, you know, the worst case scenario is certainly not dialed into prices here, but when we move above $100 or, you know, towards that level, we start doing a lot of demand destruction, Todd. So spring is a very different situation. I think at this point, it's, you know, you better get the product where you can, and you don't have to overpay, but be looking for very modest corrections. I think in terms of fall, I'd be a little bit more patient. If you can see a great contract from your supplier, that's fine. Otherwise, I think it's the time to maybe keep your hand off of the wheel here for just a little bit.
And thank you so much, and we sure look forward to having you over at the Beef House for our March 8th Spring Outlook Conference with the FarmDoc team.
No, looking forward to it as well, Todd, and we'll look forward to seeing the team there.
Dave Chatterton, and this was Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and will join us for our Spring Outlook Conference at the Beef House. That's Tuesday, the 8th day of March. You can, too. Tickets are on sale right now at WILLAG.org. The day-long event includes the FarmDoc team, the Will Ag panelist, weather with Eric Snodgrass, and of course, Beef House lunch and coffee and rolls from the Beef House in the morning, all for $25. Sign up today. It's online at WILLAG.org.